Welcome to the Jolly Cellar Master. I am your host, Jochen Heusner, and today I'm talking to Lawrence Francis, the producer of the Interpreting Wine podcast. At the time of our conversation, he has broadcast almost 450 episodes, and we will talk about how he's using interpreting wine to engage the global wine trade. He will tell us why audio will transform how we consume content, why it works so well for the wine sector, and what he has learned from hundreds of conversations with winemakers, trade professionals, wine writers, and experts. So, without further ado, here's Lawrence Francis of Interpreting Wine. Lawrence, thank you for joining me. I was really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, likewise.
Finding out about your journey and how you were able to record 435, I think we are right now as we're speaking.
445.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. Like, there's so many episodes. That's a lot of hours to listen to. And I suppose maybe you could give us like a little bit of your background. How, I think you have like a psychology degree, don't you? And how you got
a
psychology degree to, becoming one of the key players in wine podcasts.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I think the, great sort of high level question there. Yeah, the transition from psychology to wine, which I guess doesn't make sense for anyone. But I think the where I would take it, the story back to, you know, I did have a career for around 10 years as a psychologist. And I think that there was already a kind of a desire to kind of do my own thing. And there were changes in that particular field that for me, you know, it meant that was going to be a bit more difficult to really do. And as I say, kind of go and, you know, really sort of establish myself and go off and do my own thing. I was sort of really, you know, taking a bit of a break. I've been a huge fan of Spain for many, many years. And Spanish is the the first language that I've really learnt to any good standard other than English, obviously. I found myself kind of, between psychology and knowing that I'd had an interest in wine for many, many years. But it was more the coaching and psychology that took me to Spain. And I was working as a translator over there. Was living in Madrid and absolutely love Madrid. I'm one of those people that prefers Madrid to Barcelona. I just think it's like uber Spanish. It's kind of more unknown, that there's obviously, you know, amazing wine close by. And it's just a incredible place. And I was on a short-term contract about 6 months, and I was looking to stay there longer if I possibly could. It's a little bit challenging to get work, you know, even though, as I said, I do speak Spanish to a high level, but it's always, you're always better, I think, you know, and especially in English, you often have the sort of the luxury of finding jobs in English. And I was looking to work, and I found there was a job advertised in a tapas tour company, and they were doing very well. You know, they were basically showing people around in English and kind of taking them by the hand around Madrid. And they wanted somebody to do their social media. And I kind of got through the first couple of stages, and the next stage was going to be an interview. And I had like 3 weeks or so notice, and, you know, really to stop myself getting nervous, I thought, okay, I can't just sit around for these 3 weeks. I need to do something. Otherwise I'll be a ball of nerves by the time I get there. And the podcast idea had been around for a while, and I thought, okay, I'll show them. I'll turn up at the interview with a wine podcast, you know, with like the first episode. And, you know, long story short, I did have that episode. I had one episode broadcast by the time I went there. So I was able to say, yeah, this was it. You know, my first regional experience was going out to Penedès and exploring Cava, which is, you know, always be very special. But long story short, I didn't get the job. the what I thought was going to be the big sort of differential and the, you know, the must have, like, oh, this guy knows how to do a podcast. That didn't work out. but, you know, arguably it's the best thing that could have happened, because it kind of gave me that first step towards, you know, what I, as I say, ultimately the bigger the bigger piece, you know, sort of working to do something more for myself and do something, yeah, that involved travel and was something more independent. So that's the start. And that's, you know, I guess that's always going to be, you know, a very, very special, you know, part of the journey and part of the story.
Yeah, I suppose it's a blessing in disguise, right? You know, it's like you always have like these ideas how things should turn out and which way to go. And then it's like life just takes a different turn. And
this is it.
In many cases for the better or the best. Yeah,
totally. Totally. And you know, the story kind of did continue over in Spain because I recorded the first 8 episodes then. So even, you know, after I got the news I hadn't got the job, I still had lots of material because I'd already, you know, even after I found out I didn't have the job, I still continued going out, and I really liked where it sort of placed me as a visitor, you know. I guess even at that stage I didn't really feel like I fitted in with the sort of, you know, the sort of group tours, you know. I didn't necessarily want to just look at things in out into the vines and really explore the production side in a lot more depth than I guess they would do for members of the public. And I guess, you know, I really, you know, used that angle really to sort of I guess for producers over there to say, look, you know, I'll have the tour, show me around, but you'll be getting something out of this, you know, you'll be getting that conversation shared on the internet. And that was 2017, I kind of take my hat off to those first those first wineries who really, you know, threw their doors open to me and, you know, were really supportive and I guess didn't know where it would all end up and didn't have a clue about interpreting wine, didn't know, I think in a lot of cases, really exactly what a podcast was. I think they were maybe just happy that somebody was offering to help them talk about their wines in English to an English audience.
Yeah, I suppose it's like it's always like that. You're surprised, but when you ask for help, then people are always willing to lend you a hand.
Definitely.
And then it's like, so from the early days when you were talking to the wineries and listening, you know, the first 6 or 8 episodes where you actually translate and go through all those heavy duties, editing processes, you explored like many different formats. It's like sometimes it's like conversational style talks to very technical episodes as well. And it's like, so from using all those different formats, it's like, what worked best, what didn't work, what's your favorite? It's like,
no, great question. I think you definitely chose the kind of numbers right there, because I think that, if you like, the biggest step change of any of those 445 episodes and all those different styles, which you rightly say, the biggest sort of transition really came between the first eight episodes and all the rest. So even the name, I mean, I didn't even mention about, you know, why I chose Interpreting Wine was because, you know, I was also, as again, you know, back to the story about Madrid, I was also had this fantasy that a winery would want to employ me, you know, that they would want to get me in there and they would want to, you know, have me podcasting and doing social media about their wine. So it was, again, it was that idea of interpreting, in my case, from Spanish to English and getting that out there. So the first 8 episodes, they were tough because I was learning a new process, and you know, I didn't have a background in audio, as I say, I was a psychologist, so it was a totally new area. But I, looking back now in hindsight, I seem to try to make everything as difficult as possible. So I was going out there recording in Spanish, and then I was coming back, and I was, you know, maybe a couple of days later, but you kind of forget everything and the detail, and you don't want to misrepresent things. So I was then listening back to the sort of 2 hours of Spanish, translating it into English, and then writing myself out a script for the episodes. And it's almost, if looking back now, you know, I think, don't do that. If you're listening and you're thinking about starting a podcast, don't do that, because, you know, but by the time I got to the end of those 8, I was basically burnt out. It was so much work, and much as I loved the touring around, I lost the enthusiasm for going out there, because I knew that on the other side of that tour was waiting for me 6, 7, 8 hours work in order to get, you know, a fairly short podcast. And you know, I think I realized that wasn't sustainable. And then I think, you know, really taking the story on, you know, moving back to London, being here in English, I realized, okay, I could just record direct in English, got myself, you know, still got it here, my Zoom H1 recorder, which is that field recorder, that idea of going out into the field and interviewing people where they are, be that at a tasting, be that at a restaurant or a winery indeed. And actually just grabbing the live conversation there and using that as the base. So, you know, I don't know, finger in the air. I mean, that format that I switched to when I came back to London, that let's sit down, let's just have a conversation and capture it, that's probably 90%+ of the format still. I mean, some of that has evolved and has been recorded over Zoom now, or recorded remotely if I'm obviously 2021 and recording.
I was going to ask, because everything you did is like was very in person. You went to those places, you met the people directly.
Absolutely.
How has, obviously that's out of the question, has been out of the question for a while.
Yeah.
What has changed for you personally in
how I record? I mean, you're quite right. I mean, that very personal approach applied from episodes 1 to 399. So every single one of those was recorded in person. It was recorded with the same equipment, or, you know, a sort of a slight variation thereof, sometimes using, you know, slightly different bits of equipment, but everything was in person. And then, yeah, it was around this time last year that we sort of realized that, okay, we weren't going to be able to travel for sort of months at a time, and I had to kind of figure it out quite quickly. And I realize now my first adaptation to that was pretty basic. It was just a remote conversation, but with the guest recording their part of the conversation locally. And that works fine, but you know, the quality was very good. Again, I'm almost telling people what I did and then not to do that, but I wouldn't recommend doing that, because that was the only copy of that conversation at their end. You know, I literally, you know, have a decent quality. So I've since evolved, and you know, I now use a piece of dedicated software called Squadcast, which manages that conversation, records it in high quality, and then also I'll have my own local backups here as well. So
everything is foolproof.
Has it changed the
dynamics as well? Because like obviously it's like we're having a normal conversation, but like we're not in the same room, and I would imagine, but obviously you get your own view, no?
It's completely different. Yeah. It's completely different. And I guess for some people might prefer recording remote. And I guess, there are certainly on paper, there are a lot of advantages, just, cost of travel and time involved and all the rest of it. But I personally, I much prefer in person. I just think that it's a lot easier to sort of warm to somebody when they're sitting right there in front of you. And I think also, still you know, even though I probably in the last year I've probably, you know, spent more on on kit and adaptations, but it's almost like I've been trying to in a way replicate those very, very first episodes, you know, the ones where we just sat down with the field recorder and we just spoke and kind of trying to replicate that intimacy remotely, I think is very, very difficult. And that's, you know, still a format that I think gives the best results, just sitting down with one microphone often. Huh. And just having that conversation. And I was absolutely delighted that August of last year, I was able to travel. I was able to go over to the Czech Republic and I was able to produce 3 episodes in that, you know, old school format. So there's me traveling, it's just my mic, sitting down there in a cafe, in a vineyard, one of the conversations, just looking out on the vines. Sitting down and just having a conversation. So in short, I think there's obviously adaptations needed, but I think for me personally, the simpler, just sitting down in the room, sharing from the same bottle, that I think that will always be my favorite.
No, I totally agree with you. It's like it's nothing like that, but like obviously you have to make do with what you've got right now. That's and I would like to talk to you is like how things you, or what your view is, how things are going to change in the future. But first, I'd like to take a step back because like obviously we are on a podcast now. But you obviously have completely different insights in how podcasts actually work on this topic. And I was wondering, it's like if we can talk about like do a comparison, or it's like how podcasts compare to written content and video and like all the different formats.
I think it's probably obvious as we've gotten to this far that I'm hugely passionate about audio, that I'm hugely passionate about podcasts as a subset of audio, because I think there's a lot more to come from audio besides just podcasts, which, you know, happy to sort of get into. I think the theme that keeps coming up when people talk about podcasts and they compare it to written or they compare it to video, I think is the accessibility. I think it's just that that idea which you know is much bigger than me and is much bigger than podcasting, which is that kind of voice can kind of reach the, you know, the parts that other formats can't, you know. And I think that's all around us, you know, and certainly, you know, the adoption of things like smart speakers and people using their mobile phones to do voice searches and to do voice navigation and all of these things. And it's, you know, it's going to be, it's something, you know, I think the driving is a great example. You know, it's like you're in the car, you can't safely read a book, for example, or you can't safely watch a video. And that's maybe an extreme example. But I think there'll always be in different environments, you know, even just from a privacy point of view, you know, if you're sitting on a train or you're somewhere where there's other people around, you may not necessarily want other people to be able to see what you're watching. You know, it may just be that, you know, you want that kind of time for yourself and you don't want somebody kind of looking over your shoulder. I think that, so that's one thing, that's the sort of accessibility. And I think we're seeing more and more with video, people starting to listen to the video and then sort of be watching something else and feel like they're kind of multitasking. So they might be looking at their phone while the YouTube is on in the background and then sort of look up and you know, kind of have their attention split. And the last thing I remember seeing was that Netflix were working on, or they'd released an audio only version so that you could sort of be just like walking and have Netflix on in your pocket. And that I think is really exciting. I think, the book and written content, it kind of has, you know, a similar sort of constraint. But I think, you know, broadly speaking, I think, you know, there's going to be people who prefer one or the other. I think you just have to look at what works for you. Like me personally, I learn best through looking at videos. You know, I the visual short, you know, 10-minute videos, I can sort of feel like I can learn just about anything, you know. But give me a big chunky book, I'll get sort of turned off immediately. And then I like podcasts for when I'm out and I'm walking. So I can obviously, you know, pitch and say a lot in favor of audio, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be driven by the consumer. And I think this is why content is so important, because it's like, if you're a wine brand, don't ignore audio. You know, of course, getting the reviews in the journals is important, and having nice shots of your winery and you know, engaging video is important, but just, you know, don't forget the audio, because it's one of the most popular channels out there already, and all of the I think the future projections are that it's just gonna get more and more popular, especially as podcast listeners tend to be on the younger side. You know, there's lots and lots of stats on that.
Yeah, which is interesting. And I was going to ask about, like, who are the listeners? What's the age group? And I agree with you on the importance of audio. But again, this is where the psychologist comes in. It's like kind of like, you, in general, with social media, you see a trend towards shorter attention spans, shorter formats, while podcasts or audio in general requires a fair amount of concentration. Yes, you can do other stuff, but you still need to listen to it. And I don't know what happens in the back of our brains and how we're wired and what exactly the mechanics are there. But like, that's obviously a bit of a hurdle to overcome for podcasts.
You mean just in terms of the getting the right length?
Is there going to be competitive? Because people are always, like, you see, like, popular social media formats, Snapchat, TikTok, they're getting shorter and shorter.
I think the kind of the proof is in the pudding. You know, it's like, you know, you just look at what are the top podcasts out there. You know, you know, I can stand here and give my views, but, you know, let's zoom out and, you know, let's think about how people are actually consuming podcasts at scale. And you know, I do believe Joe Rogan is number one. You know, he's there for a reason. He's good on the format, and he's got, you know, good equipment, and he uses video as well. He uses video clips to sort of promote. But, you know, his episodes will regularly go over 2 hours, you know, and I think, if you like, for me, podcasting, it occupies the same place that talk radio occupies for a lot of people. And I think that, you know, where people could be having their sort of radio on and doing something at home, I don't think in their mindset, rightly or wrongly, they didn't feel as though they needed to sort of catch every word. You know, they could sort of zone out for a bit while they're reading the newspaper, and then something might just sort of pique our interest. You know, again, you know, the psychologists know that we're always processing that audio. It's like, you know, when you're at a party and you hear your name and then suddenly you realize who's talking about me. We're always processing it, but I think we give it the attention it deserves until something sparks us, you know, a noise or a tone or something like that. And you know, it's not the same as in reading. You know, if you're reading a novel, or you're studying something, then you probably want to be getting every single word. Whereas I think if if there is a slightly longer piece of audio, you can always, you can always sort of, you know, have your attention on it, sort of, you know, 50% tuned in and just be, you know, broadly listening, and then listening very closely to a bit that sort of catches your attention. And equally, I think, you know, I think audio has a lot of replay value as well, because it's, it's, again, it's not necessarily, you know, you can just be there somewhere, just sitting, relaxing and listening again, as long as I think the audio quality is good, as long as the people are talking about a topic that you're interested in, as long as they're passionate about it, as long as, you know, their voices are kind of nice tones for you to listen to. I don't think it's necessarily asking too much for people to listen to the same episode if it's on a, again, on a topic that they want to learn about two or three times. I think you can do that with audio in a way that you, that you're unlikely to do with video or, or written.
And I think it's like, what, that's not a question for you, but my point of view says it still differentiates podcasts from written content and videos. Obviously, the numbers and how much is out there, and we're seeing this with a lot of virtual tastings right now, and it's like there's just so much happening, and I suppose that is still different. Having said that, however, as I was looking at the stats before this call, it's like you get a lot of, you've seen a massive growth in podcasts over the last year, obviously, as well. And it's like, so where do you think are we on that, that curve? It's like, how far have we passed the peak? How far away are we from peak? And how difficult is it going to be to stand out? Because that's the problem, obviously, that we have with virtual, or the video or virtual tastings, because everyone produces that and no one watches that anymore.
Yeah, I think the, I mean, we've definitely seen a growth spurt, I guess you'd say, really in the, you know, the last sort of couple of years. I think it's really picked up in terms of the growth of podcasting. And I think the, if you like, the video and written has kind of had the head start, if you like, and probably you know, podcasts maybe you know, got a bit more forgotten about. But I think again, you know, I think this is one where I just bring in the sort of the number one, you know, again, bring in somebody like Joe Rogan. You know, he's just signed that mega deal of exclusivity with Spotify, where I think it's something like $90 million, and he's not bad. and his episodes are not going to be available anywhere else. And, and I'm not saying that necessarily believing that I'm going to be paid $90 million, although I wouldn't turn it down. But I think that that will get a lot of people's attention. I think that will get the attention of people who maybe in the past they wouldn't have dreamed of having a podcast, and they just kind of thought it was something so niche and so sort of geeky. I mean, the fact of the matter is that right now, it's really English language, you know, mass scale, that's driving that uptick, you know, and it's the US largely, in UK, Canada, Australia, but you know, I still think there's a lot of headroom in other languages, you know, Spanish languages and German and you know, Italian. I just think there's so much out there. And I think that the big shift that's got to happen is just that gap between people's perception of, oh, this is worth our time, and the reality of it. I think it currently is worth their time. I think that in the UK and US, where we hear about things like those mega deals, and we know people who are listening to podcasts, and we listen to podcasts ourselves, I think that gap, it's like, for us, okay, this is going to be worth our time to do that. I think maybe the where it will really, you know, sort of pick up is going to be where maybe that some of those other countries where, you know, there's a mismatch between what people think the current state of is and what people are actually looking for. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for people to sort of really think about podcasts.
Yeah.
I do also think that beyond podcasts, I think, as I say, the wider audio space, I think is really exciting. I mean, I think a great example right today and really, really up to date is something like Clubhouse, where that is a brand new social media network. But everything is driven by voice. It's like being in a conference, but you're at home or you're out or wherever you're with your phone or with your iPad. But you're not all together physically in a room. You're in a virtual room, and the experience from a user perspective is you're listening. You're not seeing people there, so you're listening, and I do think that something like that has really had a lot of success, and I just think that will have impacts into people's just awareness of voice and the power of voice. People will try it, I think, and they will, because it's so hot, you'll get new people coming in who were video only or written only, and they'll be like, oh, this Clubhouse thing is pretty cool. And I think it gives people a chance to sort of try audio, but without the commitment of, I'm going to set up a podcast, I'm going to publish every month or every week or however often. So I just think that something like that is really important, because that will, if you like, add a lot more fuel onto the fire, which I think personally is already well burning in the US and the UK. I think it will help to throw further fire into other languages, which I think is so important, other markets, to really get them realizing, wow, this is a great opportunity. This is something that we could do for ourselves. And I think, yeah, Clubhouse is kind of doing that promotion job for the podcasting industry. I think it will bring a lot more people in.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I fully agree with you on the value of audio in general. But until Spotify steps up and offers you the 90 million or equivalent, with your podcast, you also work with wineries and you work with wine regions. It's like, maybe you can just quickly explain, it's like how you do that and what the value is that you provide.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as I say, you know, it's interesting. We're kind of picking up the story again a few years on. So as I say, you know, it had always been in my mind, okay, how do I monetize this? How do I turn this into a business? And, you know, right back at the start, it had always been my dream to just, you know, travel around Spain and interview winemakers, and what a life, eh?
That's not a bad life. I was going to say.
And I think the professionalization of what I do, and it really, you know, came with really, I would say, analyzing what happens when you hit play, because again, all of that we've spoken about in terms of those, you know, those trends and people looking for audio content, I think you still need to be able to demonstrate, okay, what is this actually going to give? What is the value here? And I think lockdown actually gave me a chance to just sort of think about that. And I started from my own perspective and saw, okay, well, the most up-to-date figures are that all of the episodes, the average listener engagement with my channel through 2020 was more than 4,500 hours per month. So that is cumulative listening. Of course, it's, you know, it's spread right the way across all of those episodes, but that's significant. You know, that is, I think it's something like 9 or 10 months every month. So you know, there's obviously that, you know, there's a lot of ears on my content, if you like. And then, you know, looking at the average engagement, so every time that somebody came in and pressed play, so it was approaching 150,000 plays last year, again across that same duration, but the average engagement was 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Which meant that, again, as they came to the channel and as they saw something that they liked and as they pressed play, the average time that anybody kind of hung around and listened was 22 minutes, which is not insignificant at all. Mm-hmm. And I think any you know, wine brand, I think would love to have that kind of engagement, because, you know, I've noticed the phenomenon of wineries, especially in wine, you know, my sort of target, my target customers, you know, creating videos, which for YouTube, which is great. As I say, I love videos. I learn very well through videos. But I noticed that their videos can be like 20 seconds long or 30 seconds long. And I just think that something like wine and something like a wine region or even a winery itself, you know, I think they almost deserve a bigger canvas on which to kind of paint their picture. And I feel that video, for all the reasons why it's sort of ahead of audio in a lot of ways, more users and more engagement, I think that also makes it more competitive and it makes it more difficult to get that share of the audience.
Yeah. Well, I reckon like there are things that video or images can do what audio will never be able to do. Is like you have to be a very good narrator to tell a wonderful story that creates those images in your head. And we are eventually visual people, and so we were very driven by that. But like you rightly say, first of all, it's very expensive, and the kind of engagement, like I was looking at it, and the numbers, like you said, 22 minutes, right? It's like when you compare that to written content, I think we are the average time someone spends on reading blogs is 37 seconds or something like that. Obviously that creates much less engagement, also kind of emotionally, because you look at it,
that's it,
it's not staying with you. So.
Yeah, that's it, and it's like you've actually brought up an interesting point there. Something that I said at a conference I was recently invited to talk to, and I don't think it's probably, you know, this really I think brings home the difference. I think when we listen to something, as you say, we don't have the visual, but it's my belief and it's my experience that when we listen, we can't but help to create a visual.
Yeah.
So I talk about this in the terms of the difference between reading a book and watching a movie. You know, when you sit down and read a book, we can't seem to but help to create this image. You know, we create the visual of what we're hearing about. And as you, of course, as you say, you have, you know, better writers than others, but I think even, you know, sort of a very basic story, you know, we still, depending on, again, on our engagement and where we are, you know, we will fill in so many of those blanks. So you know, I don't know, but maybe this is a this is an area for further exploration, but I think that, you know, you could argue then that, you know, through the visuals through the audio you are still getting some of the visuals. And you know, I think, for example, you know, I think one episode that really stands out for me in my catalog is episode 385, when I was over in Oregon and I was speaking with a winemaker, or the she calls herself the president of the company, actually, Claire Carver, at Big Table Farm. Mm-hmm. And it's her husband who is the winemaker there. But you know, I dare anyone listening, you know, go to interpretingwine.com/385, listen to her description of their property and tell me that you don't feel as though you'd been there. It is, you know, the most sort of incredible 10 minutes or so that she just described this virtual journey around the property. So, I just think that, like that almost is for me the kind of the blueprint. I just think that, you know, every winery out there, every region should have their Claire Carver, or should have their you know, their winemakers, or the people who really know the land and are attached to the land, telling those stories in an audio format, which, as you say, you know, are going to get wider out there, might just be on in the background when people are doing something else, and just have them out there telling your story in that channel. And you know, why wouldn't you? It just seems like, you know, the sort of unexplored frontier for so many wine regions, and you know, who knows? I mean, I don't know the exact cost, but you know, it may well be that if they sit down and they work out what they get from either producing content of their own or working with somebody like myself, then they'll actually find that, you know, it's actually a very reasonable way for them to reach many, many more people, and to again reach them at a time when they can't be doing something else. They can't be reading, they can't be watching a video.
Yeah, especially in the current climate. But do you think it's like, I mean, that's obviously the million-dollar question is, what's going, it's like I read this morning, I think it was like someone at WHO was saying like, this is going to, the current crisis is going to stay with us for at least this year, but like there's light at the end of the tunnel, and next year things will go back to a kind of normal. What does that mean for podcasting? And this is like, what is going to be your role? It's like, how is that going to change? Is everything going to be back to normal, or will it stay or become a bigger part in the overall structure?
Yeah, it's great. Great question. I mean, yeah, how does it sort of, how does it all sort of play out? I think what I would point back to, you know, I like to sort of, you know, base my answers in somewhat of reality, but you know, really thinking back to this time last year, when really, if you like, the new restrictions came in, there was a lot of concern at the time in the podcasting community that this was sort of the end, because so many people knew that audio was something that got consumed when you were traveling, when you were commuting, and you know, these are the sort of the anecdotally the two biggest areas. So all of a sudden, overnight, you lose the traveling and you lose the commuting. So people were very, very sort of scared. And I remember a slight drop off in some of my figures for I think March and maybe into April last year. But I think, yeah, the people adapted, though. People adapted very quickly, and I didn't notice. And I think, you know, 2020 was my biggest year. You know, it grew almost 40% on the previous year, and I think that listening numbers and engagement has been very resilient, even as we've shifted, we've done the shift the other way, you know, and I think it's brought new people into audio and into listening to podcasts. As I say, I think that, you know, something like Clubhouse shouldn't be ignored, because right now it's just Clubhouse, but as I'm sure you're well aware, and the listeners are aware, one of the most important things of the last few years in social media has been the ability to copy features from other networks. You know, it wasn't that long ago that Instagram did not have a stories feature, and they shamelessly copied it from Snapchat because they were scared that they, especially their younger audience, were migrating away from Instagram, were going to Snapchat. So I've heard some talk, and I believe Twitter is very close to a feature called Spaces, which is going to essentially mimic a lot of what Clubhouse is doing. Could we see Instagram adding that on as a feature as well. You know, will that come through into Facebook? You know, stories are now everywhere. We've got LinkedIn stories. It all started with Snapchat. So I think that, you know, long way of saying basically, but I think that like the sort of, I'm picturing like the infiltration of audio. I think the Clubhouse is probably just the start. So I think that kind of draw and that kind of attraction of new people into thinking about, oh, what does audio mean for me? What's the sound of my brand? What sort of things do my customers want to hear about? Is it the same as what they want to look at? Is it the same as what they want to watch? These sorts of questions, I think, are going to be more and more meaningful. And I think that the integration of audio into other social media platforms, which is inevitable, and as I say, it's already happening with Twitter. I think, you know, for me, the future is very, very bright. I think it will just then come back to content and also to quantity as well. You know, quality and quantity. I think that will ultimately be the arbiter of who gets the success and who sticks around, basically. Yeah.
That leads to the question, what's the future going to be like for you? Are you going to branch out from podcasting into different audio formats? Do you have any plans for the foreseeable future? And it's like, what is going to change for you?
Yeah. I think, certainly the near future, I think it's hopefully going to be working with more brands as well, because I think that, you know, this idea of I think there's still a lot of people that realize audio is important, and again, you know, say that kind of integration into other social media channels is going to make it all the more attractive, and people are going to kind of be, oh, let's explore and let's sort of see. So I think there'll be more and more, as I say, wine regions, countries, wineries. I think those are the sort of the big three that are, you know, I want to work with and that I think, you know, can probably benefit most from working with somebody like myself or indeed doing it themselves. You know, there's no reason why a lot of these brands shouldn't do it themselves. And I've got a kit up on my website, which is the link is interpretingwine.com/kit, KIT. It probably needs a bit of an update now, but that basically sets out the kit that I started with and you know where I first went. So yeah, I think that's really my focus for 2021. I also think that there's something else you know, audio related, that's, as I say, that I think, you know, audio and obviously podcasting is a subset of audio. So I think, you know, also exploring Clubhouse, and I think, yeah, getting sort of really familiar with the dynamics there and how that works. I think that's a, you know, going to be, you know, certainly for the next few months, that's going to be one that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on. I've also, on the audio side of things, working with a wine merchant in England named Davies. I've really been pioneering, I think, something unique for wine, which is capturing winemaker audio tasting notes. And at present, they have something like Davies have something like 180 winemaker tasting notes on their website. So this means that when a customer is going to the website and is looking at the bottles and, you know, has all the usual ABV, region, grape varieties, all the rest of it, what everybody has basically, they have a really unique point of differentiation, which is they also have an audio player at the bottom with that play button, and somebody can just click play, and in a clip of maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that. Nothing too crazy. They'll have a sort of almost like we call it a virtual on-demand tasting from the winemaker, and they're telling them, oh, you know, this is our oldest vines. We harvest these in the, you know, the early morning, and we put them into the stainless steel, and it's really, you know, fresh and, you know, whatever the story is for that wine, but they're hearing it directly from the winemaker. And I think that, people want that, you know, I don't think they always want to read a note that's been written by a sort of an intermediary. I think they often want to get a stronger connection directly back to the winemaker. And I think the audio, again, you know, you don't need to have a perfectly lit scene. You're not trying to really capture the beauty of these wine regions, which are stunning. I think, yeah, there's something about leaving the listener to kind of fill in the blanks, give them the stories, and let them kind of fill that in for themselves, make it personal for themselves. And I think there's a lot of potential to broaden that out.
I think that's a great feature, and it's like definitely helps to kind of like really connect with the wine a little bit better and the people that actually make that wonderful stuff.
Totally.
Final question, and I'll let you off the hook. If you could go back 4 years now, what would you do differently? Would you do anything differently, or would you go through that learning curve that you've created for yourself?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a few things that I would probably change. I would ever do what I did at the start in terms of the format that I used, which was like being at the winery and not actually recording what I was doing there with a view to broadcasting it. It was almost like it was just a horrible format to use, you know, coming home with these 3 hours of recordings and I've got you know, more interesting things to do than spend 2 days editing a podcast. That being said, though, you know, I think it's interesting to just reflect on would I have sort of dived into my new format, you know, that easier format of just recording the conversation and broadcasting it, which I discovered when I came back to London. I may not have gone into it with as much energy and, you know, I produced and broadcast 220 episodes in the first year. So in 2018. So, you know, I may not have done that. It felt like I'd done everything the hard way for the first eight. And then I was sort of let off the hook then. And I just dived into it and thought, wow, this is so much easier. Let me, you know, the time that it was taking me to do one, I can do 10 now. So rather than doing less, I just did the 10. And I think, yeah, overall, you know, let's say I wouldn't change anything. I guess, you know, I like to think that you sort of meet people on your way for a reason, and you make mistakes for a particular reason, and that you're meant to sort of learn something from that. I think, yeah, maybe, yeah, there's elements that I've learned along the way, and I'll often learn better if I do things the wrong way. You know, I'm not necessarily always the one that just follows the advice. You know, I like to sort of press buttons and you know, move the dials around and sort of play with things, and sometimes that means that you don't get the perfect recording, but that then means that you don't make that mistake again in the future ever. and you kind of learn from that. So yeah, so I like to say, yeah, it's been a pretty incredible, not even 4 years now, you know, I sort of 3.5 years, and yeah, I you know, wouldn't really change too much, I don't think, along the way. And just, yeah, looking ahead and, you know, really, really hope to sort of say broaden out the scope of who I'm working with and what we're doing, because I think we're just at a really exciting point in the development of audio. And I think it's really just getting started.
Good stuff. Lawrence, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, no worries.
It was a great conversation. And hopefully we can do that again in the future sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers. Right. Thank you.
And that's all for today. I think Lawrence made a number of great points, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. You can find the key takeaways in the show notes at jollycellarmaster.com, together with the details for getting in touch with Lawrence Francis and a few other things. If you liked the episode, it would be great if you could leave a review and make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Jolly good.